Welcome to the Dog Knowledge Podcast. I'm Renee Erdman, your host. I am a certified dog trainer and behavior consultant and own bravodog.ca. Today we're talking to Catherine Mancuso-Christ, who is a graduate of the Academy for Dog Trainers. She's an associate certified dog behavior consultant through the IAABC, and she specializes in families with children and dogs. Catherine has been a professional trainer since 2003 and owns Hands Full Dog Training LLC, and that's in Wichita, Kansas. Today we're going to be talking about children and dogs. Hi, Catherine. How are you?
Doing great.
Thanks for joining us today, taking a few minutes out of your busy schedule. I know you're quite busy.
Yes.
Let's chat today a bit about dogs and babies and kids. And let's start off by you telling me just a bit about your background and when you started working with dogs and specializing in children and families with dogs.
Yeah, definitely. So I started off like a lot of dog trainers with my family dog when I was 11 years old. And I've been interested in dogs a long time. But unfortunately, at that time, we used ancient training manuals that should have been in a museum instead of on bookshelves. But luckily, at 19 years old, I ended up working for PetSmart as a trainer for a short time, realized that my education with there was not quite sufficient to be a professional. So I ended up getting a degree in psychology with an emphasis in animal behavior and animal science.
Wow.
And then eventually realized I wanted even more and got a certification in training and counseling from the Academy for Dog Trainers in 2016. So nice. So that's like the professional side of it. The dog and kids side is that I have 4 kids right now, ranging from 13 to 4. I have 3 dogs ranging from 10 to 3. I don't know. And so I have a lot of experience in the kids and dogs, but as you may know, experience does not mean you know what you're doing all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
So I also ended up getting some education through Family Paws Parent Education to make sure that when I was giving kid and dog advice, it was actually correct. So I have a licensure through them. I'm a licensed Family Paws parent educator.
Excellent. Do you find that there's a lot of misinformation out there about how we should be interacting or how children should be interacting with dogs and how parents should be facilitating that?
I think so. And maybe not even as much miseducation as a lot of lack of education. I think a lot of the education people get is from seeing other people's pictures scroll through on their Facebook feeds and they go, oh my gosh, that's so cute. I want a picture like that too.
Right.
So have their dogs all sit on the couch and they put their newborn baby in between them and, you know, run off and snap a picture and it's not safe, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that there's a need for a little bit more education in general about what we can expect realistically from dogs and from kids and how we can kind of change our expectations to match what reality is.
Right. Okay. So what type of advice would you give parents that are bringing a dog into the home and they've already got small children? So let's chat about maybe an adult dog. They've mm-hmm. adopted a dog from a shelter. The dog is new to them and the family.
Yeah.
That
we see that a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think the top most important thing is actually logistics, which sounds really weird. You would think it'd be some gushy thing like building their bond, which is great. but logistics are the most important thing. So if I have a, you know, 9-month-old lab mix rescue from the shelter, I cannot train him in one day not to knock the 2-year-old over. You know, that's not right. going to happen in a day. So we need to set up things like, you know, tether stations or crates or exercise pens or, you know, rotating the dog from inside to outside during the day to help create an environment where everyone can stay stress-free and be successful without the ghost of mom guilt, you know.
Right. That's immediately what I was thinking is that I think that there's a lot of guilt on the parental side, at least from what my clients, the feedback they're giving me is that they feel bad. They want to integrate them, the dog, with the family, and they don't want to seclude the dog or the children from the dog. And, you know, I'm sure the advice that you would give would be, well, you're setting them up to succeed by giving them that space for now, and then seeing how things progress.
Yeah, it's not something to feel guilty about. It's a really normal expectation that sometimes the dog will need to be confined so that you can do what you need to do. Of course, they can also be integrated, and you can set up situations where you're working with the dog and the kids together, and everyone's relaxed and calm, and we're just hanging out. But in a lot of situations, like, oh my gosh, every time we all go out in the backyard, the dog knocks the kids over. Well, you know, for now, let's have the dog leashed when you go out in the yard, or let's have the dog running free and the kid sitting next to you on a chair with a bag of treats, asking him to sit every time the dog comes up. So there's some ways to do that kind of management of the environment without necessarily doing that extreme of, you know, dog outside in pen 24 hours a day. You know, there's so much in between. I think that's really important to understand.
Yeah. And even just little snippets of time where they're working on, you know, whether it's mat training in the environment with the children, but not everything all at once. And I think that that's, correct me if I'm wrong, that can be the big mistake, is to just do too much at once and expecting it to just sort of work out.
Yeah. Got to take it one step at a time.
Yeah.
But training. So that's actually my second, you know, big best advice thing is, you know, that you've got to train the dog. So we, you know, if we have them confined and we have them rotating and separated and we're using management, that doesn't mean that once they're back together, the dog will know what to do. So, you know, the flip side of it is while we're managing, we still need to do stuff like mat training and teaching, you know, sits instead of jumping, so that the dog can have more and more freedom over time. And there should be this really natural progress of, you know, a little bit more separation to more full integration as the dog is able to learn impulse control and respond to you and respond to the kids.
Okay, excellent. What do you think, what's a really important piece of the puzzle that you think is missing in terms of parents understanding how the dog feels in the presence of the child, or what the child is doing and how they're interacting with the dog?
I think that a lot of parents may not know how to read their dog's body language in a way that will be helpful. A lot of times dogs will communicate in whispers before they bark or growl or bite or get upset. And I think parents will benefit from being able to communicate with their dog if they understand that when the dog, you know, turns their head away from the child or raises their paw or licks their lip or yawns, that means, hey, you know what? I've had enough time to go ahead and redirect everyone. That's a big piece of the puzzle in helping everyone live together happily, is knowing what your dog is telling you.
Yeah, I think learning more about body language and is really the direct line of communication and understanding how are our dogs feeling. Because if we don't understand body language, which is their communication tool, we're in trouble. Or at least, you know, if we're misinterpreting that body language through the wrong information, then of course it's not helpful.
I've had people say, oh, you know, the dog's being submissive, this is great. And I'm going, no, the dog is afraid. You know, the dog is afraid right now. That's not a good thing. We want to set it up where he's not showing these behaviors. He's not ducking down away from the kids when they come to pet him. So that's a big problem.
I send a lot of folks to ispeakdog.org for body language information and some videos and things. Do you have any other resources that we could send folks to?
Yeah, I think another good one is livingwithkidsanddogs.com, which is Colleen Pilar's website, and she specializes in this as well. And she has a lot of really good pictures and articles on this exact subject. And she has a lot of really good books on this subject too.
Ah, excellent.
So I would send everyone there. I hand out her book like candy to my dog and kid clients. So she also has a book for trainers on, you know, for dog trainers that are professionals on how to understand and how to help clients. So there's two sides.
Excellent. Good, good, good. So a client comes to you, they are expecting a baby and they want to get ahead of the game. What are some things that you would typically advise them to start doing before the baby even arrives?
So before baby arrives, there's a lot you can do to help your dog prepare. And a lot of it has to do with not saving all the big changes until after baby's home. So if the dog's going to need to sleep in a crate instead of on your bed, if you're going to have a swing going back and forth with a baby in it making noises, if you're going to have maybe fewer daily walks or a little bit less attention, or use a confinement area in your home, all of these things, if you make all those changes the day after baby arrives, you have a huge amount of stress on your dog. And it's too much at once. So the best thing that they can do is to start making changes earlier so that the dog can acclimate to everything else, so that when baby arrives, then we just need to get used to baby.
Right. Yeah. And do you think that I think that's a really good point, is that even the smallest change, I think in you know, it depends on the dog, of course, but it can be quite stressful, a change in the environment. And you have to think, that's a lot of change, right?
Have you met those dogs that will get upset when the couch moves 2 feet or something like that?
the world is ending. You can just imagine that it can just be overwhelming. So I think noticing too, even with a lot of preparation, is just giving your dog, giving them a bit of a break too. If there are house training issues after the fact, it's not because, you know, they're trying to be a jerk. It's the stress of the change.
Stress.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, which leads me to ask you some questions about the different phases for children as they go through different development phases, how that affects the dog in the household.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one. there are such fast changes as babies develop, and dogs are usually not prepared for them because most dogs do not have the ability to read what to expect when your parent is expecting. Mm-hmm. And so since the dog doesn't know, it's on us to help prepare the dog, prepare with the dog for success. So right now at the beginning, when you bring a newborn home, some dogs don't even read that as a human being. They're going, what is this creature that is squeaking? And so there needs to be a lot of safe separation of, you know, not having proximity as your goal. Our goal should not be, let's put the newborn on top of the dog. It should be, how calm can we keep the dog around the baby? You know, and Jen from Family Paws has a saying, which is dog and baby on the scene, parent in between.
Yes, so I love that.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
So, you know, lots of safety and supervision. But then, of course, as the baby starts to grow and move and make more noises and crawl towards the dog and wiggle around, you might think, hey, my dog is doing great. My dog loves the baby. But suddenly, when the baby crawls toward them and stares them in the eyes, your dog gets scared. And so as you see developmental changes in your baby, you might see changes in your dog where you're confused and you're saying, you know, why is this happening? I thought my dog liked the baby. And it's not that your dog didn't like them. It's that they just weren't ready. So when you see that been staring and you have the approach of the little crawler, you know, flopping or rolling towards the dog, those things can scare them. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, even as they get older, now you have the kid suddenly walking and running straight at the dog and then grabbing them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, unfortunately, it's not that, you know, if the baby is fine with the dog and everyone's happy, then the rest of it's going to go smoothly. A lot of times when you have a toddler, you start to see problems that you didn't earlier. So you really do have to have this understanding of all those different developmental changes in your child and help your dog prepare for them.
Right. Excellent advice. So I have had a couple of situations where the dog is interested in the baby or the child and they're approaching, but then when they're too close, you know, then they're responding by growling, that type of mm-hmm. thing. And I think that conflict, you know, conflict, I think is a concept that I don't think a lot of people think exists in animals.
Yeah. It does.
But it doesn't make sense to the average person. Why would the dog approach if they were not feeling happy or comfortable or relaxed?
So I tell people what would happen if an alien spacecraft crashed in your backyard. Okay. You wouldn't just run up and fling it open and say, "Hey," but you might kind of creep towards it and poke it with a stick and see if it moved. And guess what? If a hatch suddenly appeared and a big green face popped out, you would scream and run off. So, you know, it's the same kind of thing where, you know, the dog is interested and they're inquisitive, but that doesn't mean they feel totally safe. So it definitely is a real thing. And we don't want to put dogs in conflict situations. You can also see conflict situations sometimes the other way around, where you're sitting with your dog and then the toddler is approaching and the dog likes cuddling you and wants to get petted and doesn't want to leave and you're their safe spot. But here comes that toddler. And so then they growl in that case too. There's a, you know, they don't want to leave, but they don't want to stay and they don't know what to do. So,
Yeah,
yep.
and I can imagine as a parent that it's got to be scary to hear your dog growl at your child. Tell us a little bit about, you know, that type of warning and what parents can expect or how they should feel. I guess you can't really tell people how to feel, but give them a you know, crash course on growling.
Yeah, growling is a form of communication. So you want to think about it as your dog saying, "Hey, I'm uncomfortable," instead of, you know, "I'm an evil demon." It's just a way for them to talk. They can communicate with growling. They don't have words. So you don't want to ever punish it or get mad at them or get upset, because that's like, you know, if you said you were uncomfortable with a spider crawling on you and then someone punched you, that wouldn't make you love the spider.
No.
But if they said, "Oh, I'm sorry," and took the spider away, then you would go, "Okay, you know, that's an appropriate end to this communication." So you want to, in the moment, you want to read it as a sign of discomfort and the dog needing more space and, you know, get everyone their space. In the future, you know, you don't want to repeat the same situation over and over. So in the future, you would try to set it up to where the same situation is not happening again. But definitely don't see growls as a bad thing, you know, in the sense that my dog is defective. They're not. They're just a dog and they're just communicating with you.
Great. Now, I think that we can probably agree that humans, we fail at prevention management quite often, to even despite our best, you know, efforts because we're human. Let's say that toddler, accidentally fell on the dog and the dog, nipped or bit or, you know, there was an altercation that took place. What, oftentimes I think that then that's a, you know, parents think they need to rehome their dog. I know it's a bit of a loaded question, but what type of advice would you give in a situation like that?
Well, the first advice, of course, which hopefully is not self-serving, would be that they need to contact a professional who
Right. Yeah.
specializes in babies and dogs, because a
Yeah.
lot of trainers don't and they don't understand these types of relationships. So that's a good step, and really seek professional advice before making a decision on something like rehoming or euthanasia, because in many cases, I have many clients who had that same problem, and they were able to make a few changes and successfully reintegrate their whole family and not see the problem again.
Wow.
And in some situations, that's not the case. And in some situations, rehoming is the right answer. And it's really hard to, you know, say what any individual family should do without knowing more details, you know.
Yes.
But I will say, it's not like, you know, that's the only thing you can do is, "Okay, my dog nipped the kid and now they cannot live with them." That's actually not the case.
Right.
Unless they've done really severe damage, and it would not be safe to ever risk it ever happening again. So that's really the bottom line for me.
Right. And it's probably quite a common scenario where kids are accidentally doing something to the dog or they're not supervised. And, you know, I don't have children. I have to say that. So I'm not a parenting expert by any means, but what I have witnessed with toddlers and depending on their developmental stage is that they can't seem to control some of their physical movements.
Yes,
Right.
so
And so they're not
the
trying to be jerks, right? But they
no,
can't control some certain movements. So I can
that's
imagine, yeah. Go ahead.
That's why we don't focus on, you know, teach your 1-year-old to pet gently, because
right.
they can't, right? At some point, their little hands are going to bash the dog or grab the fur, and that's normal, and it's not a behavior problem in the child. It just means we need a little bit more space. So yeah, they don't have a lot of small or large motor control in some cases. They might trip on the dog. And that's why a lot of it is more important to have the structure in your home set up safely instead of relying on the toddler to babysit themselves or on mm-hmm. the dog to babysit the toddler.
Yeah.
Let me ask. Mention just that separation thing, which is so important in the supervision. You know, if you can't be there to supervise your dog, and you have a child who's, you know, 5 or under, they should be separated. You should never ever have a time where the dog and the child or baby are ever alone without a parent there. That's one of the most important messages we preach. So I'm just going to stick it in here.
No, it's great.
A lot of preventable accidents would not have happened if you just had a parent on the scene.
Right. Yeah. And I think one of the most common questions or misinformation that sort of floats around is that from the beginning, the dog needs to be taught that the baby is higher in the ranking system within the family. And I'm sure you come across that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell us a bit about
I
that.
Actually had one family legitimately tell me that they had heard the advice that they should bring home a baby blanket that smelled like the baby, and then that they should hold it on top of their dog and hold him down until he stopped struggling to prove the baby was dominant over him.
Wow. Oh, dear.
And so this is the kind of advice some people are getting. And luckily, these people approached me with it and said, wow, this doesn't sound right. And it does not, because it's not.
Yeah.
So there's nothing like that you can do to, you know, have any impact on a perceived ranking between people and dogs. And the fact is that all of the research from over 50 years shows that there's really not any kind of ranking or hierarchy between people and dogs anyway. So luckily, that's one of the things you can just take right off that 7,000 item to-do list if you're expecting a baby, or if you have kids and dogs, is don't even worry about trying to teach them who's subordinate. The most important thing is actually building a positive relationship and having the child and the dog working together, maybe using treats or maybe using trained cues to interact, and teaching the dog to respond to the child, not to feel, inferior to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And at what age do you think children are, again, sort of open-ended question, it depends, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. What age do you think is appropriate for children to be even walking the dog, for example? I'm now
walking.
Oh gosh, depends on the size right. of the dog.
It depends. Does.
Yeah.
I let my 13-year-old daughter walk my 24-pound mini Aussie on her own.
Yeah.
Younger kids, especially, I would almost view it as babysitting age. If they're below the age where they can babysit someone else, they probably shouldn't be taking a dog out solo on a walk.
It's a huge responsibility.
It is.
So many ways it could possibly go wrong. But mm-hmm. I think it sort of circles back to that thought that the children should be viewed as not just playmates, and that they should be viewed as sort of I hate that word master. I don't use it normally, but you hear it floating around, like that they should be viewed in that way. I think there are much better ways to integrate the children into the routine of caretaking. But what are some ideas and thoughts that you have about that? Like the other one is feeding the dog. Like, oh, well, the children should feed the dog.
I will admit my 10-year-old son feeds the dogs, but in a structured setting where they're in their kennels, and it's a very planned routine. So I think some of the nicest ways for kids and dogs to interact are with trained routines. So for mm-hmm. example, one of the ones we do is a ping pong touch in the backyard, where they teach the dog to target their nose to their hand using mm-hmm. positive reinforcement training, and then ping pong, touch, 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 back and forth between the kids. And then we go out in the yard and set the kids up in different corners of the yard and have them touch. The dog will run all the way across the yard and hand target, get a cookie, and then touch and run all the way back across and get a cookie. So anything that's predictable, where everyone knows what they're supposed to be doing in the moment, is probably the best way for them to interact. Stuffing enrichment toys, kids love stuffing Kongs for dogs. You know, they like doing all sorts of things with dogs, and as long as it's safe and predictable, and they're not just out running around in the backyard without mom or dad, throwing toys in the air and the dogs jumping on them, you know, that kind of unstructured, unsupervised play is probably not as safe.
Yes, yes. Excellent points. Puppies that are being brought into the home with very young children, they're nipping, it's, and bless, I have to say, bless those families and those parents that are up for the challenge. But thoughts on that, because I know that that's a huge challenge for folks.
It is. It's very difficult because, you know, as we know, puppies do need to nip. They need to learn to inhibit their bites, and it's normal for puppies to nip. So what we really try to do is, I know this might shock you, but provide a lot of structure so that in times where the puppies are feeling particularly nippy, they're on leash, they're being managed by the parents, and, you know, and you're intervening right away. And then you could also teach alternative behaviors to the puppy, like getting a toy, you know, like hand targeting hands instead of biting them. So there is a lot you can do to help with that. But it is a big problem, and I think a lot of parents don't realize that it will take, you know, a few weeks or months for the puppy to outgrow this, and it does cause stress. But it is manageable.
Yes, and I think it's tough too when, you know, you've got a toddler. Again, I'm only making statements based on my observations with families that I work with, but it's got to be tough to be, you know, coaching a toddler that just, you know, is just not at the stage where they can follow the direction.
Right.
So not feeling bad about just completely separating them for periods of time.
Yeah. Let go of that guilt. It is totally normal to have to do some separation and to rotate who you're paying attention to, so that when you are paying attention to them, you can give them your whole focus and be successful.
Yeah.
And that's okay. You know, same thing with house training. I've encountered a family who was house training their new puppy, and they had a 1 week old baby too.
Whoa. Wow.
Yes. Yeah. And so my hat goes off to families with dogs and kids, because they are working so hard, you know, to build that little family, and they do it. You know, I don't know if I could house train a dog while I had a 1 year old baby. I might go insane.
They're amazing. I think it's hard enough. Puppy raising on it in itself is a difficult job. I think we can agree. So the added stress of that. And I think, that you've really driven home some fantastic points about interactions with children. And actually, I think one thing we sort of touched on, you know, the photos that circulate online, that I think once you understand body language cues a bit better, when you go back and view them, they really are quite telling. But that I love that analogy that you use, that dogs are often whispering. You know, they're trying to tell us something, but it's in a different way than humans would communicate. So we need to pick up on those cues. But those photos of different interactions, let's talk a little bit about some of those that you commonly see.
So some of them have children or babies interacting with dogs in a way that the dog is clearly uncomfortable, and not respecting the dog's personal boundaries, but it's things that shouldn't be happening at all. So there's a difference. So some of them, they shouldn't happen at all. Like there should not be children climbing on a dog, you know, no matter what. Even if the dog seems to like it, it's not okay. They could hurt the dog.
Yeah.
There should not be children grabbing and hugging and restraining dogs. It's not safe. So when I see those, I'm thinking, oh man, you know, this person probably doesn't understand that this interaction itself is not safe. And I feel for them, because I don't want their child to get hurt or their dog to be scared, and they obviously would be doing better if they knew better. So that's why I think education is really important.
Right.
The other flip side of it is an interaction that could be fine, but in that case the dog is not comfortable. So, you know, let's say if it's just a child walking past a dog that's on the couch, you know, it's a pretty normal expectation to think, gee, my kid should be able to walk past my dog. But sometimes you might see a toddler, you know, let's say they're pushing one of those noisy toys and then they run past and the dog, you know, it puts their ears back and tenses up and, you know, growls. You know, in that case, even that normal expected, you know, normal interaction still shouldn't be happening. So sometimes when I'm looking at pictures or videos, part of it is, you know, basic rules for interacting with dogs that aren't being respected. And then part of it is just not seeing problems or stress in a dog that's in a situation where normally you'd expect them to be fine. So I don't know, I guess I'm differentiating.
Right. No, I think they're all important points. And just realizing that our dogs are individuals and that in certain situations they may feel one way and in other situations they may feel differently. And again, it all goes back to being able to read body language,
right?
And understanding your individual dog and their stress levels.
Yes.
So, yeah. So fantastic. This has been an excellent conversation, I think. And I really hope that it helps families or, you know, people that are just, you know, deciding to bring a dog into their home or having a baby. So any other things that you wanted to add to this conversation today or resources? Well,
I could probably add one more thing, which is something we like to tell everyone, is that kids are watching you all the time. So not to add to any mom guilt, but how we interact with dogs is how they're going to interact with dogs. And so being self-aware, treating dogs kindly, using only positive reinforcement training, not chasing dogs and grabbing things away from them or yelling at them is a really important way to help your children be successful with your dog too. So I do like to mention that. And then definitely if anyone, you know, needs help with their kids and dogs, a couple of resources are that, you know, Colleen Pilar's books, Family Paws Parent Education has a finder you can locate. An educator that might be close by to you. And they also have a 24-hour-a-day dog and baby hotline where you can call and speak to someone, a professional that will help you if you have an urgent scenario.
Wow. That's amazing. Yes. I didn't know about that. Huh.
Yeah. So you can go to their website and get that phone number if, you know, if anyone ever needs it.
Excellent. And your website is?
Their website, the Family Paws, for the phone number would be family, I don't know.
No, your website.
My
for your business. That's okay.
my website is handsfulldogtraining.com. I own Handsful Dog Training in Wichita, Kansas. So if you're in Wichita, I'm the one to help you.
Next time I'm there, because I'm there frequently. No, I'm just kidding. Thank you so much. I think this has been a great conversation. And we've provided some good resources, I think, for folks. So, yeah, thanks again for joining us.
All right, you're welcome. It was fun to talk to you.
Excellent.
Everyone. All right.
Take care. All right. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us today on the Bravo Dog Knowledge Podcast. Subscribe via iTunes and feel free to leave us a review if you liked what you're listening to.